Before we start hearing from you, we've got all these, this material you've provided. I'll just get some exhibit numbers for those so that we've got the right record.
Number 12.
12?
Yeah.
All three in the same number?
They all go together or are they separate?
They're three separate positions, they're all related to the remarkable scheme unit.
Probably one exhibit number, a couple of them, I think. And the other thing is, your evidence is in parts, because we deal with the whole hidden parts and question you rather than.
Yes, well, I'm happy with that, sir.
Yes.
And just to.
And our question was tomorrow.
Yes, yes. And just to clarify, I'm here representing both NZ Ski and Skyline Enterprises Limited. Ms. Snodgrass is here on behalf of Skyline Enterprises only. Okay. I will start with my summary.
Yes, and it's easier to speak to those, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. In regards to NZ Ski Limited and the evidence I submitted regarding exemptions for earthworks within the ski area subzone, note that both the panel and Mr. Wyatt for the council indicated that to enable further consideration of my proposed exemptions, it would be useful to be provided with examples of document sections where the Department of Conservation has approved earthworks in the ski area subzone and which have had particular regard to the effects of sediment discharge and earthworks on or within water bodies. In recognition of this request, I attach to the summary Department of Conservation concessions OT34109 Ski, OT34110 scheme and 49957 scheme. All of these decisions contain similar conditions, so I will briefly discuss only OT34109 scheme, which was significant in terms of the scale of the activity authorised. Specifically, this concession authorised construction of the Kirby Basin passenger lift system, as well as trail works 1,700 metres in length and comprising some 374,000 cubic metres of earthworks and widening of an existing ford over the rest of Spurn Stream. The effects on watercourses and wetlands are discussed on pages 26 to 28 of this document, and the special conditions on pages 33 to 36 require construction plans for sensitive sites to be approved by the Department of Conservation prior to works commencing, avoidance of wetlands where possible, control of surface runoff and silt to vegetation, wetlands and watercourses, submission of an overall project plan for approval by the Department of Conservation prior to works commencing, and very importantly, monitoring of silt control, disturbance to wetlands and all works at sensitive sites by an independent monitor averaged at one visit per week for the duration of the works, and that works for the vehicle crossing and pipes across the rest of Spurn to be carried out under supervision of the Department of Conservation and an independent monitor. In my opinion, these documents, in addition to the protocols contained in Appendix A of the original submission, illustrates that the Department of Conservation has specific consideration to the environmental effects of earthworks on water quality, aquatic ecology and hydrological processes. This is highlighted particularly by the stringent monitoring requirements for an independent compliance officer to visit the site on a weekly basis to ensure compliance with the agreed control measures. This is well above the level of compliance monitoring that I understand either QLPC or the Otago Regional Council have implemented in regards to the various resource consents approved at the remarkable ski area in which I have been involved in. I also note that under Section 17SD of the Conservation Act 1987, an applicant can be requested to provide any further information necessary to enable a decision to be made, and that an environmental impact assessment should be provided in accordance with Schedule 4 of the Resource Management Act. Further, section 17 SE of the Conservation Act enables the Minister to commission a report from any person in regards to any matter raised in the application, including a peer review of information supplied by the applicant. I consider the Department of Conservation therefore have the expertise and or the ability to seek the necessary expert comment to ensure the effects of land development on waterways are appropriately mitigated. I can stop there if you want further matters related to the Skyline submission.
Yes. Safely looking it up, can you remind me what the panel recommended in terms of indigenous vegetation clearance and dock concessions?
So the panel recommended certain that I put forward a similar permitted activity rule and provided that the applicant provided a copy of the Department of Conservation concession to the council, and it was exhibited that the area of work was consistent with that approval provided by the Department of Conservation.
As I recall, the Department of Conservation provided some sort of written evidence that they were in agreement with that provision. Is my recollection correct?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
Yeah. Have there anything from the Department in terms of the earthworks and at this?
No, I haven't had nothing from them, and I haven't actively consulted with the Department of Conservation myself.
Mr. Dawson, do you have any questions on the earthwork session?
Thank you, Mr. Dent. Just to save me reading through these, do they cover dust management issues, or are they more focused on the ecology and water related?
It's more the ecology and water related issues, so there's specific control over sediment loss and erosion controls, particularly work with the erosion, for example, where there's large scale earthworks and there's a requirement for vegetation rehabilitation, where that work hasn't been completed to a sufficient standard by the 1st of May each year, there's requirements to cover up the exposed areas, for example, and prevent sediment loss, which may enter vegetation, wetlands and waterways before the works commence again in the following spring and summer.
So, because that's going to be my other question about the focus on erosion control or stability, I suppose, of the opened up areas. Docks concessions, you say, do cover those matters, but in order to protect significant vegetation or aquatic waterways, wetlands, and those sorts of things, but not necessarily in order to avoid the dust nuisance for an adjoining property or something like that.
No, and I mentioned in my primary evidence that typically for NZ Ski, at least with Bond Remarkables and Coronet Peak ski fields, simply the elevation at which they exist, dust hasn't been an issue for adjoining properties.
So which of the ski fields are covered by dock concessions, are on dock there? Or which of the ski field subzones or areas of that?
So my understanding is both Coronet Peak and the Remarkables, and I believe Treble Cone is also on public conservation. And the others, such as Cadrona, is privately owned. Soho, which is on the far side of Cadrona, is, I still believe, past release and subject to recreation permit. And then Snowbarn, I think, might be in council ownership, park council ownership.
And in relation to the Otago Regional Council consents, which you cover to a certain extent in your primary evidence, your experience is that they haven't been monitoring, certainly to the least same extent, their Department of Conservation has, but have you been involved in getting consents from the Otago Regional Council for earthworks or for discharges?
I have obtained a large number of resource consents from OIC and the QRDC for earthworks and for diversions of streams, crossings of streams, culverts, new accessways, etc.
So the consents you've obtained from the Otago Regional Council have related to waterways, works in and around under over waterways, as opposed to just being on a land use consents for those works?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, just following off on my colleague's questions. So not all the ski fields are on dockland, some are on other land. And I take it from what you're telling us that dock grants is concession, and I presume they rely on these consultants or others to undertake monitoring of the conditions being applied. But I wasn't aware the dock actually had in-house engineering staff. They may do, I don't know.
To my knowledge, I don't think the Department of Conservation have in-house engineering expertise themselves, but as I mentioned, I was reading my statement out during the processing of the concession, that if they feel it necessary, they can commission a report on those matters if they needed to. In terms of the monitoring, the concessions, from my recollection, require the Department of Conservation, in this case NZ Ski, to agree on an independent monitor that will come out and do the monitoring works. It's paid for by the applicant, NZ Ski, and as far as I can recall, they typically use the same monitor we have done for the last few years that I've been involved, which is Dawn Palmer from Natural Solutions for Nature Limited. Dawn is an ecologist with about 28 years experience, and she's been involved in ski field monitoring and mitigation works since about 1994.
Okay, so going into it unnecessarily. So her expertise would be in ecology, not necessarily engineering. It's typically engineering conditions involve things like sediment, erosion, sediment control plans, and things like that, which is more of an engineering type field. Is that covered by ORC instead, is it?
No, that's also covered by the Department of Conservation. So a number of their conditions and the protocols for large-scale earthworks that the Department of Conservation and NZ Ski have collectively developed specifically include control measures such as silt control ponds and cut-off drains and measures like that to try and control the discharge of sediment into vegetation as well as waterways and wetlands.
Okay. Leaving aside the potential overlaps between ORC and the District Council for a moment, I understand in general primary evidence that if the rules were to be framed in such a way that provided that the council rules effectively don't apply in situations where a dock concession would be allowed, that sort of thing would consider acceptable. But I suppose it would come in a few situations where the land is not a dock concession.
Sorry, sir, could you...
So if, for example, the rules could be framed in such a way that the proposed QLDC rules that you're concerned about would only apply in situations where there was not a dock concession in place.
Yes, that would be.
Thank you.
One is just in your evidence in chief, you appointed you pointed out there's a significant difference between avoidance and minimising. I wonder if you can expand on that for me, just to avoid, minimise, and possibly even prevent.
Could you just direct me to...
In your original submission, which was the 6th of August 2018 with Mancrest ONZ Ski and Skyline Enterprises, and it's bullet point 83. And it's to do with standard 25.5.14 and its application to earthworks in the Euskirius subzone.
within the word of God.
Yes, so with that particular standard, I suggest removing the word avoid, because that is absolutely no dust whatsoever can leave the boundary of the property. Now, if I recall correctly as well, I listened to the recordings of the questions between the panel and Mr. Wyeth, and I think there was some discussion about whether that could be qualified a bit better with regards to perhaps referencing industry best practice and what that might be. I've given that some additional thought of whether or not there could be a brief advice note that refers to the Queenstown Lakes District Council's brochure for a guide to earthworks in the district and the mitigation controls that are contained within that.
Are you conferring that that's considered best practice?
Well, it's issued by the council and it does contain a wide range of earthworks controls, not just for dust, but it goes into quite a lot of detail with examples of our sediment control as well.
That's all good, thanks.
In your primary evidence, you also referred to submissions relating to earthworks in the Ben Lomond subzone.
Yes.
Do you? Sorry, I haven't. You're going on to talk about Ben Lomond next, but look, just a quick glance made me think that you're not going to be talking about earthworks in your summary. Is there anything outstanding in relation to earthworks in the Ben Lomond subzone?
Over and above what I've suggested in my primary brief of evidence, no.
I mean, has any of that been picked up in rebuttal evidence and resolved? Or was it, are there still outstanding matters?
No, the council, I believe, is still wanting to maintain a volume limit of 100 cubic metres for the Ben Lomond subzone, whereas I suggested that 1,000 cubic metres, which is the current restriction under the operative rural general zone, that area would still be appropriate. I haven't seen any evidence to the contrary that the permitted limit of 1,000 cubic metres is having adverse effects either in terms of landscape or other environmental effects in that area.
All right, so that's still an outstanding matter between the 42A officers and your evidence.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Yes, we move on to the skyline.
Yes. So I'll proceed to paragraph 1.5. So I wish to comment on two areas of concern raised by the council regarding the Ben Lomond subzone, being the addition of the land to the west of the Skyline Enterprises Limited lease area and north by the fire ponds for the purpose of a helicopter landing area. Ms. Gilavazzi outlined in her evidence that it wouldn't be appropriate to rezone the land to the west as the reserve management plan hadn't been updated, and that would be the appropriate public process to consider the future use of this land. The current reserve management plan is over 13 years old, and 3 years past its formal review date, and I'm not aware of an imminent timeframe from the council to formally commence a review of that document. The situation becomes a chicken and egg scenario as to whether the reserve management plan should be reviewed before changes to the district plan affecting the reserve occur. In my opinion, it makes little difference which occurs first, as any potential lessee or licensee will need to comply with and obtain approval in both the RMA and the Reserves Act. Further, I note that the Council has not pulled landscape evidence in regards to the proposed zone extension sought. However, in regards to the area to the west, Dr. Marion Reid, who provided landscape evidence for the Council in the Stage 1 mapping hearings, was not opposed to the rezoning of this land, and it is supported by Ms. Snodgrass. I note that the reserve management plan covers an area of 387.9611 hectares. There are a number of objectives and policies relating to protection of the reserve's natural values, being scenic, natural quiet, passive recreation. But one of the overall objectives is to provide for recreation and tourism activities, including commercial activities that do not adversely affect these values. The plan also recognises the two distinct areas of recreation and use in the reserve, being the high-use facility developments, private commercial operations, and primarily visitor use, and the more informal traffic or terrain-based casual recreation based on natural landscape use. It is my opinion that given the proposed area of zoning will retain the clustered effect of commercial facilities, and that it will affect 7.28 hectares on Box Peak and 1.2177 hectares in the lower terminal area, or approximately 2.1% of the reserved area. The zoning would not be inconsistent with the current differentiation of high use and less formal recreation activities, leaving the vast majority of the reserve for such passive recreation. In regards to the proposal for the expansion to the north adjacent to the fire pond, I consider that this area could be illustrated on proposed district plan maps specifically for use as a helicopter landing area only, so as to preclude buildings on this prominent part of the proposed zone. This could be strengthened through adaption of notified rule 38.11.6, which prohibits buildings within an identified building restriction area. I note that Mr. Brown, who acts for Ziptree, supports this approach, as well as my recommended provisions for ensuring only one informal airport exists within the zone. Demarcating this area for an informal airport and actively discouraging more than one such informal airport in the B-moment subzone will enable the maintenance of this iconic tourism activity, which has been occurring at Bob's Peak for 43 years, into the future. It is also considered consistent with the intent of the Reserve Management Plan, which specifically enables helicopter landings for tourism purposes adjacent to the Gondola Terminal and the notified purpose of the zone. I acknowledge this proposed area is outside the Benlane Recreation Reserve, but I consider that it lies in such close proximity that the effects of this activity on the Benlane Reserve would be similar to that currently enabled and anticipated by the Reserve Management Plan.
On that last point first, the area, the northern area by the pond,
yes,
is zoned rural in stage one, and I understand there's no submissions, no appeals on that zoning. There may be appeals on the rules, but there are no appeals on the zoning of that end.
Yes.
An informal airport, so provided for as permitted activity, provided the standards of it.
Yes.
The only standard, I think, well, perhaps the frequency of flights might shift the skyline sequence, groups the standard, as well as the distance from the boundary.
If they had a concession from the Department of Conservation, the frequency of flights wouldn't be an issue, but it's the proximity to the,
yes,
boundary of a different zone.
Yes.
And then capture and require a fully discretionary activity consent under,
right,
the rural provisions.
And if Skyline was to seek such a consent, who are it to be the affected persons?
The Department of Conservation, first up, is the administrators of the land. I would expect, given the litigious history on this issue, that Ziptree quite possibly would be, and the Parapontas as they take off area not far from the location as well. That would be adamant from my understanding of what such a proposal may be at this point in time.
So, and if we were to accept your suggestion and include it within the open space zone, specific provision of helicopter pad there, would that circumstance change? You'd still need the concession.
You'd still need the concession. There would still be the potential for those same parties to be considered affected.
So it really makes no difference.
Other than
to be fair, we can't ignore the Parapontas, can we?
No. No.
I mean, Ziptree may be happy for you to go there.
Yes, Yes, it would be a similar process, I guess, what I'm putting forward in terms of the provisions of the proposed planning zoning would provide an anticipation and be more enabling perhaps than a straight discretionary activity implementations that will decision to be completed.
So that would actually put parapages at a disadvantage for the point. And it's what I'm wondering is whether a zoning change requires a lesser consideration of effects on obviously affected parties than a consent application.
Sorry, can you put that to me, consent?
What I'm wondering is whether a zoning change requires a lesser consideration of the effects on obviously affected parties than a resource consent application would.
No, I don't think it does. But a resource consent would have obviously quite a bit more detail than what I'm able to provide to the panel at the moment. And I believe there are policies within the notified provisions, particularly policy 38.2.1.4, which talks about managing the effects of conflicts between different types of preparation activity, and also policy 38.2.1.1, which talks about the open space and recreation zones being fit for purpose and safe for all users as well. And I think there's still a lot of consideration that can be given to any potential affected parties, not just the paramotors, as part of an application of my proposed provisions.
Well, if we were to be looking at rezoning, wouldn't we have to be looking at it in a way that gave effect to those policies? So
yes.
Shouldn't we be looking at the potential effects at this stage between different activities and minimising the effects on people where possible? And which requires,
yes,
requires some of the information to
and the matters of restriction, matters of discretion that I had put forward for informal airports included having to have either a Part 157 determination from the Director of Civil Aviation Authority or an independent safety report, and what the approval process under Part 157 from the Director of Civil Aviation would undertake is an aeronautical study of all the users in that airspace to make the determination whether it's appropriate for the helicopter landing area in that location as well. So the paraponders would be given due consideration as part of that process as well.
What would happen if we accepted your recommendation, we recommended that to the council, and this piece of land was identified and found inappropriate for that, and then on the evidence of the review of the evaluation, etc., concluded it was inappropriate, what would happen then? And what would happen to the zoning? What would the plan be? An honest document, in other words.
It still could be. Just because a proposal may not be considered appropriate by the Director of Civil Aviation, it may be that an alternative proposal could be more appropriate, and there might be a wide range of parameters as to why that could be the case, whether it was flight paths, the design of the helipad landing area, landing and takeoff area. There could be a number of things that could be changed between different proposals.
Can I follow on from the same theme? If an area was identified, as you suggested in the district plan, as being for helicopter landing only,
someone came along and made a restricted discretionary activity proposal, wouldn't anyone coming forward with that proposal lean quite heavily on the fact that it had already been identified in the plan as being a site for helicopter landing, informal airport only? Isn't that starting to acknowledge a level of appropriateness that we don't have any information to assure at the moment?
Yes, to some degree, I think you're right, Commissioner. But I also believe there's enough robustness in the provisions themselves to look at all the potential issues that may arise from such an activity and the ability to seek either approval or notification to those parties as well.
If you're identifying in the district plan a location for an informal airport, albeit subject to future resource consent processes, shouldn't we have some assurance that that is an appropriate proposal, even if we don't know the details of it yet? There are not going to be no appropriate proposals for that site?
I agree that that would be a significant benefit in the decision-making process, but what I can tell you at the moment from my involvement is there is no firm proposal at present. On behalf of Skyline Enterprises, I have met with the Department of Conservation on at least two occasions to discuss the potential of a concession on that land. That was both prior to the current conservation management strategy coming into effect and afterwards to discuss the new provisions. Other than that, all that has been looked at the moment is a preliminary sort of earthworks plan to look at the location of a helicopter landing area. There's been no further discussions with Parapontis, affected parties. There's been no approach to the Director of the Civil Aviation Authority, so I simply don't have that information provided at the moment.
All right. I'm just about to make sure I'm clear, because this has slightly puzzled me. What zone are you proposing, not subzone, but zone, are you proposing that this area to the north of the fire pond would have?
That it would form part of the Benlow subzone.
So it would be an informal recreation zone.
Informal recreation zone, Benlow
subzone. But Benzone is subzone, and the Bob's Peak area of that, or just...
Yes, within the Bob's Peak area.
Bob's Peak area of the Benlow subzone in the informal recreation zone with an identification on it that says helipad only or something, or informal airport only.
Yes.
That's all for me on the north area.
I'm still trying to get my hand around that last step. And you have questions on the...
On the west area.
The west area, yes.
Yeah, sorry, is there anything else I want to ask about the west? The west area? Again, what activity status, and you might have said this, so I apologise if I've overlooked it, what activity status are you proposing that upper terminal activities might have in that western extension area?
So in terms of commercial and commercial recreation activities, I have gone through Ms. Edgley's rebuttal evidence, and I note that she assessed a proposal by Mr. Brown on behalf of Citrec to reword notified rule 38.11.3 such that commercial recreation activities would be restricted discretionary activities, and that commercial activities ancillary to those activities would also be restricted discretionary. Having given that more consideration, I accept the position of Mr. Brown and Ms. Edgley on that matter, and that's the activity status that we're applying for activities that the zones expanding to the west.
So, which is the same... is that the same activity status as is currently provided for in the BOP? In the BOP's peak?
In the
Ben Lomond subzone, but not the BOP's, and in the BOP's big area. So just be applying that BOP's peak area as it is.
And just
extending it. So the same activity status as would apply in the area around the current upper terminal and the Luigi area, etc. Okay, but again, not really knowing what sort of activities might occur in that area at the moment.
That's correct. I did mention in my evidence in chief that I have been approached by a company that would like to do a commercial recreation activity in that area. There's been no application under the Reserves Act. There's been no application under the Resource Management Act. And unfortunately, I can't provide any further details on it at the moment due to commercial sensitivity. But I can advise back in 2008, that as an example of something that may go in that area, there was a period of litigation between Skyline and ZipTrack, and there were two lease applications put forward in 2008. One was a variation by ZipTrack to their lease arrangement for their zip lines, and there was a subsequent application made by Skyline to put a new luge track down through that area in the western area that I'm proposing to be rezoned. Those applications were heard concurrently, and ultimately Skyline's application was declined and ZipTrack's was approved, and Skyline haven't applied for that since. But it's an example of a type of commercial recreation activity that may be able to be accommodated in that area.
At the moment, is it part of the subzone, but not part of the BOP's peak?
No, it's not part of the Ben Lomond subzone.
It's not part of the subzone, okay.
Only part of the informal
recreation.